things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that. There's so much that has been passed down to the world. And then so much of the history we have is because it's fantastic enough that we have things like...
Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show, and
Hi.
Joe's phone was on, busted.
And you know what? I so cocky was like, and condescending was like, is your phone up?
That was perfect. Awesome. Well, we have money for you to win, and AirPod Pros, you can call in 330-595-1600 and guess a three-digit code. There are two hints.
Three now.
Three hints.
I announced the third
hint. Oh, what's the third? What's,
all right, so what the first the one is that I got the number from a clock.
Okay.
The second one is partner, and the third one is that you have one of the numbers is even and two are odd.
Ooh.
A little bit of elimination.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, that helps.
So 330-595-1600, and again,
and how much is in there now?
It is $600.
250s, I saw.
Yeah. I was kind of disappointed when I went in the envelope, and now I'm down to the 50s.
You couldn't print out another 100 back there?
I could have, yeah. I'm on it.
And we got the AirPod Pros, so it's good. Well, I want to chat for a little bit today about processing opportunities. You and I were on the phone this morning, had a potential opportunity fall into our lap, but not everything that falls into your lap is a good thing. Nope. Not every opportunity is one you should take. And so what's Joe's process for navigating opportunities? What's a healthy way? You know, some people get out their whiteboard and make a pro and con chart. Other folks will, you know, call a few friends, you know, phone a friend. Some people will poll the audience, you know, like on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. They're going to kind of get the pulse of, well, do you think I should do this? Do you think I should do that? But how does Joe navigate opportunities? You and I have talked about, you know, you get a lot of folks that call and want business investment or want an opportunity to come alongside or a partnership. And how do you know which ones to say yes to and which ones to say no to? How do you evaluate that?
Yeah, so I field a ton of them out too. I mean, for every one that I entertain, I probably have four that I decide to pass on. And it's not that I pass on it because I don't think it has any merit. They all have merit because, you know, they're all different. They're all structured a little bit different. So I met with one today. And I'll give you this example. So I have one qualifying question, and that's it. I have to be able to answer this question for it to be the affirmative.
Okay.
So I put it in the Joe machine, and I say, can I add value to it? If the answer is no, then it's not for me. Even if there's money to be made, if I can't have anything to offer, then I'm just an extractor, and I'm a parasite, and I'm going to take value off of it, and I'm out. And it's not based on you. You could have the greatest idea.
Yeah.
We met with one lady who was doing that dog grooming. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so she laid out her
business. She came on the business show with you Saturday.
And she laid out her business plan. She gave me all of her finances. And I looked at her and said, you don't need me. Like, you are like this close from doing it on your own. So let me be a supporting agent. Let me tell you how awesome you are. If you do need to bounce something off me, I'm here for you. But go.
Yeah.
You can put your rocket boosters on.
Yeah, no, that's so good. And you see that on shows like Shark Tank and others where they're just like, there's nothing we can add here. You know, you already have three investors. I'd just be another investor. You don't really need me or whatever. So that's interesting. So the first question for you is, can I add value? I think that's such an important thing when you look at life in general, relationships, because we're not just talking business opportunities. We're talking opportunities with people, opportunities in life to experience things. And when you step in to take those opportunities, you're always asking, what can I add? Not what will I get?
Exactly.
That is a different approach. Most people would not, like if I was making a pro and con chart, it would all be about, well, it does this for me. It allows this. I can do that. This, you know, this would be great. Well, it would be a negative here, here, and here. So you're saying you start with the question of what do I bring to the table and is it worth my time because I get to add something constructive to this opportunity.
Yeah. And so like the rest of it takes care of itself. I've never had to once wonder that if I couldn't add value, that somehow there was going to be a benefit. And I didn't know what the benefit could be financial. It could be just a relationship. It could be a connection, but if I can add value to it, I don't really say no to those kind of things.
Interesting. So a high value for you is, can I contribute something?
Exactly.
And I've seen that on a personal level, like, you know, with stuff at church, you want to contribute. And so you're looking for a spot where like, all right, why aren't you on live streaming, and thank God we did that before the COVID hit.
Yeah, right.
You know, can I jump in and try that? Sure. You know, and in a number of other arenas as well. And so I think that's a really neat thing. And I think a lot of our audience members probably start with the question of what's in it for me.
Yes.
Is that a bad thing to ask that question? What's in it for me? Most of us approach things very selfishly in that sense. And it's always about, well, how is this going to affect my time? How is this going to affect my other relationships? How is this going to affect my current employment? And so if you don't start, I would say, not many people start with that question.
No.
Most people start with what's in it for me. Is that just the wrong mindset to go into opportunities? Is that going to cause you to take more wrong ones than right ones?
Yeah, you're going to limit yourself, because typically when opportunities present themselves, they're not looking to give you something, right? Mm. They're not going to, you know, say, what can I do for you kind of thing. So most of your opportunities need some like nurturing in order to turn into something that even to be able to see what's in it for you. Typically when we jump on an opportunity, it's a problem solving opportunity. Mm-hmm. There isn't something, and we don't know like how we're going to get there. We don't know what's in it for us, but it still needs solved regardless of if it's us or not. So, you know, if somebody came to me, like this contracting thing is sort of like the closest to be out of my wheelhouse as possible, right? Can I swing a hammer? No, right? Yeah. So I had to keep really deep,
no.
really deep into the value that I can add before I was like, I see where I fit into this puzzle.
Gotcha, gotcha. Yeah, and that is a perspective that I think would help a lot of folks out. So when they get an opportunity, a new relationship walks in, they send their resume and get, you know, go for a job interview, they, you know, start dating somebody new, the question isn't, well, what am I getting out of this? It's what do I have the opportunity to put into it?
Yeah, if you want to get into a transactional thing, look at it from what you're going to get out of it, because you're going to get super focused on it. And when you can't see the payoff, you're going to be out before it's able to be, you know, to birth anything.
I think one of those...
I blew your mind a little bit on this.
That was good. I didn't think you were going to go there.
All right.
It's very Gary V of you to add value, jab, 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 and then right hook. But I think ultimately... The one when you're asking what's in it for me and you get presented an opportunity, that's very egocentric. It's very, selfish. But when you're coming to the table saying, all right, can I contribute anything? And even if I don't get anything in return, this opportunity or this person or this business venture or whatever has come into my world, why has it come in? There's some sort of reason. And so can I add value there? Can I add value there? Can I add value there? And if I can't, well, that's a closed door.
For sure. Okay. Yeah, but let me put like a little asterisk on that, and because the defensive posturing where you're looking at it for the benefit in the action. Now that's helpful when you're maxed out. Like the goal is to take 10% of your worst offending things and strike them to get room for the other opportunities. So you basically have to sort of rate those things and have to know where they fit on there. So when you're maxed out, if you're in a zone where you're making so much money or you're affecting so many people, and something comes along that's making less money or affecting less people and says, hey, pay attention to me, you're going to make a sacrifice for something that has a better value. And this one, I mean, I don't ever strike it down or, you know, I put it in a holding pattern more than anything. I don't want it to go away, but I also don't want you to wait for me because I've got attention going over here. So it's like, hey, if you're still here in 1 month, right, I'll be more than happy to sit down with you.
No, it's good. What about for the listener that hears that and goes, well, great, you know, I would love to try and figure out opportunities, but I don't get any opportunities, none ever come my way. So I don't need your advice on how to navigate them. I just want some.
Right.
And so how do we get opportunities, right? It seems like some people get all the opportunities, just everything comes their way. And it's like, they don't even need opportunities and they're piling up and standing outside their door. And then other people, they can't rub two nickels together. They can't find a magic lamp. They can't win the lottery. They can't, like, nothing ever goes their way. So how do we have opportunities come our way? How do we attract the right opportunities? How do we attract any opportunity?
I'm going to insult some people here, and I don't mind that. So I was at a soccer match, and I was listening to other parents talk to one another because I was super interested on, like, what's your leading story and what are you talking about and what do normal people do for small talk? What do you want to bet that every conversation that I had was a freaking complaint. Mm-hmm. The traffic, the weather, there's not his name. So if I'm an opportunity person and I walk up to you and the first thing out of your mouth is complaints, right? What are the chances that you're going to say yes to anything that's going to say other than tell me it's a bad idea and whatever. So I'm going to shut my opportunity hole and I'm going to talk to somebody else because all you're going to be is negative and tell me how it's not going to work. That's why you're probably not getting the opportunities even pitched to you.
So a positive outlook.
Big time. The language you use is very critical.
The language you use. What else for opportunities? What else pulls opportunities your way?
Say yes. Say yes and yes and yes. So don't come up with reasons to say no. Come up with reasons to say yes.
Yeah. So like the movie with Jim Carrey, Yes Man, where he says yes to everything.
Everything. Do it. Just spend all of your free time saying yes to things, and then you will see what happens from those yeses. Yes, you're going to be doing some stuff you really don't like because you're going to say yes to everything, right? But those things might dimensionally go into the different areas that you would have said no to, and it would have limited you.
Yeah. I think optimism is a huge one. Being able to... Because there's the quote that says a lot of people pass on opportunities because it shows up dressed in overalls and looks like work.
Yes.
Yes, and so, does. But if we're able to see opportunity in everything, that's for me, you know, optimism comes when, hey, this is an opportunity. And other people are like, no, that's a problem. Other people are like, no, that's a crisis. That's an emergency.
Well, and that's when you have that perspective of complaint. You're looking for flaw in things. And you might call yourself a perfectionist, but you're looking to shoot everything down even things that had value in it.
Yeah. And so coming at it with that positive light lets me not see problems, but see problems as opportunities. And then I'm able to go, what can I add value to this problem?
Yes, exactly. If you bring out the problem, you dive on that sucker. Now I'm in, right? You know, just watch someone conquer a deal. But if you're like just complaining about it for the sake of just complaining, I don't want anything to do with you.
Yeah, that's big. So you definitely have to have a positive outlook, because if it's a negative outlook, you're literally going to repel opportunities.
Yeah, and the language is important. If you use negative language, and I don't mean negative language where everything's going to die and everybody's, whatever. Right. It means saying things like can't a lot and won't a lot and shouldn't and a lot. Like all of those things are like dressing what's going to happen next, right? It's basically making a assured outcome that you're not going to do stuff because that's all you ever say.
Yeah. Language is vital. Just having a conversation this morning, it reminds me of a scripture. I know.
I need a sound effect every time you do that.
Yeah. Like bazinga or something like fun.
Or a harp. I'm gonna get a harp queued up. Just delay. It's coming.
There it is. Behind door number one, Joe, we have Proverbs 18:21. But it says that the power of life and death is in the tongue. It's in the mouth, and those who love it will eat its fruit. And there are a lot of people think, oh, well, it really doesn't matter what I say. And I'm not a proponent that you're just going to go out and say, oh, today's going to be a good day, and it's automatically going to be a good day. But when we practice those repetitions and we live in such a way that is praiseworthy, and we live and we speak in such a way that's honoring and elevated, it attracts those things to us. I have more good days than I have bad days. It's not because I'm any different than anybody else. It's not because I don't have problems. It's not because, you don't have issues with finances, the doctors, whatever. But each of those I get to see through the lens, and I get to shape them with my words. And so as I choose what comes out of my mouth and I choose what's in my mind, that allows those opportunities to come my way. Words are of the utmost importance. Reminds me of another scripture, Joe.
I love this.
In James chapter 3, it talks about how we put bits in the mouths of horses and we can steer the whole animal, and the rudder of a ship controls the direction of the ship, and a small spark creates a fire. And they compare that to the author there compares that to the tongue. And he says, a man that can control his tongue will be perfect in everything. And that's really the battle, is controlling our language around opportunities and around stuff like that. Cause it attracts and it repels. When I hear certain things from certain people, I'm like, oh, I want to be around them more. Like that inspires me, or that sparks me, or that pulls me in. And then you hear other stuff. It's like, you don't even want to be around you. Why do I want to be around you? You know? And I think people don't really think all the way through that and recognize that, So 100%. What are some ways that people can shift language? Should they like keep a tally sheet of the crappy things they say, or how do we shift that so that we start receiving some of these opportunities through our outlook and through our words?
Substitution is what we would normally do. And so we would in songs and in movies and in conversations when we catch one another, my wife and I. So you've got a good partner.
Your wife's big on this.
She is too. Yeah. Like, well, I created that. She never used to be like that.
Okay.
But she grew up in a household where it was making lists of things that you can't do. So it was nothing but observing all of those negative things. And she got super good through me at countering those out. And she saw the value in it. Because before you think it's so subtle, there's no way that that has an impact.
Right.
And then you do it, it's like, holy shit, this was profound. And I wish it's so easy to do, but for some reason, what we observe, we think carries weight. And if I tell you about how bad the traffic is, like, what's that do for you? Like nothing. There's no value in me complaining at you.
Yeah.
If I say to Kim, thank God I was able to make it out here today and enjoy the sun, that does something for you. You get a little warm inside. And so like there's positive pressures and there's negative pressures. Uh-huh. Right. And I'm going to frame this two different ways, because when you think negative, it's like negative is like bad or villainous, when negative pressure is just like avoid. Yeah. Right. And so that when you do, all you do is talk about what isn't right, then you have to extrapolate the what is. Right. So let's just cut to the chase and not do this dance. And just tell me what is. Right. And that positive pressure allows you to commentate your own life by telling you the things that you want and not just the stuff that you don't want.
Yeah. No. And it's very true. I see this, especially with my kids, you know, having young kids, they repeat everything. And then you'll hear them say something and be like, wow, I guess I say that a lot. And then sometimes I'm like, wow, I say that a lot. I'm glad they repeat that. And so being intentional with your language around your kids, not just like, hey, don't say that word, but creating an atmosphere where they hear things repeated enough that you start hearing it come out in their verbiage. One of the things that I know in our culture that I love at Bridge of Hope, when I hear people say things and they'll be like, well, pastor always says, and I'll get quoted that way. Jed's done it a few times on his show. And I'm like, you know, it's a good show when you get quoted.
Yeah, that's right.
But, you know, even when people will do it without attributing the quote, and they'll say like, well, you know, at Bridge of Hope, this is what we do. And I'm like,
exactly.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I've said it enough. That we've repeated it enough.
Culture.
I've done enough. Exactly. And, you know, and sometimes you feel like, are we ever going to get there? You know, but, when you start hearing those words repeated, you know, stuff has sunk down, whether that's with your kids or your company or, yourself, when you find yourself in that subconscious mode where it just comes out and you're like, oh, I guess I do believe that, you know, and I've arrived at that spot.
Yeah. And I used to hate when you'd have like a traditional church and then you have the repetition of certain things. I didn't ever see the value in it. It felt a whole lot like, you know, I was forced.
It's like God made the whole thing and he knew what he was doing.
Maybe. I'm willing to hear that. But no, I mean, you know, when I start my day by saying the same thing and I end the day by saying the same thing, it doesn't have to be in meditation or prayer or anything fancy. Sure. It's just literally doing the same thing, but doing it the same way on a regular basis.
Jews pray three times a day. They pray the Shema, the same prayer. You know, Christians pray the Our Father. You have those various, and there's a reason that a lot of religions do that, is because it builds a culture and it builds those repeated phrases and gives those things. Why we're told to memorize scripture. That's why it comes out of me all the time. I say, I have a scripture for that because I put it in and I built that culture of that book is now in me and it comes out in those spaces. So
in context too, like I love how you can drill something in and make it fit with the conversation. I love it.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things.
Oh,
nice. You like that?
Yeah.
There's some comments. I'm going to read them because we don't do that entirely enough. So we got Joe that's out there. Joe says, up with sun gone, with the wind, she always said I was lazy. And Matt says, thanks for everything. And I know what you mean. I'm sure that was responding to something you said. So thank you for being out there, guys. If you want to win my money here, you can call 330-595-1600. Give me a 3-digit code. If you get the right answer, you get the prize.
Yeah. You want to call in. Those iPod Pros are sounding nice. So make sure to call in and you'll be able to win Joe's $600 and iPod Pros. So when it comes to opportunities, when it comes to those sort of things, how do you turn down good ones? I'm sure you've had some opportunities in your life that you're like, I am a dummy if I don't take this, like, but I know I'm not supposed to. How does that work for you?
Well, I've done both. I've taken ones that I shouldn't have, and I really regretted it. And once you do one of those, you're like, I'm going to build a shelf, right?
Yeah.
I know exactly what I'm going to say when the perfect one, like I had the ear of a bunch of really big companies, and I knew structurally I couldn't take on these companies. And I knew if I take them on, I'm just going to reveal that I'm not ready to take on these companies.
Yeah.
So what happens if your perfect customer comes to you before you're ready, right? One version of me takes it and jacks it up as bad. And then every time I drive by that place, I'm like, oh, no, why? Right? So I build a shelf and I say, listen, I got to be honest with you. I love you guys and I really want to take this on, but I don't think I can add value right now. You know, we can revisit this sometime in the future. I'm going to put you right up here on the shelf. I'm going to call and check in with you every once in a while. And if at the time I feel like I'm ready and I can do a good job for you, boom. And that way, if they don't, it's okay. Like it really is, because there's a ton behind that. I do not believe that there's only a finite amount of opportunities.
Right.
In my lifetime, I have more than I could ever field out in 20 lifetimes.
How do you know when to, how often do you pass along opportunities to other people?
All the time.
And do you do that networking? Because so there's some times where you're like, really don't want to deal with this opportunity. Let's pass this along to somebody else. And there's other times where you're like, man, this is a great opportunity, but I can't do it. I can't fill it. Let's, you know, let me call my buddy. This would be great. How do you do that in a way, whether that's in business, you know, maybe if it's a relationship, you meet somebody at a, you know, business thing and you're like, you know, you would really, I love what you're saying, but the person I need to connect you with is so-and-so. And how do you navigate those in such a way and not feel a loss?
So one of these happened,
especially if it takes off.
One of these happened like yesterday.
Okay.
So, I've been, basically, I tell my whole life story on social media, so everybody knows what I'm doing. So somebody quoted and said, somebody had a question about modeling and 3D printing, rendering for 3D printing.
Yeah.
And he said, Joe, can you help him out? I'm like, message me, let me know what's going on. And they gave me the details. I'm like, oh, that would give me such a head start. It would be a paid gig. It's modeling. It's exactly what I'm doing right now. And I said, okay, somebody can do this better than me.
Yeah.
I'm just getting started. And I can fumble around, or this person really needs someone who can get the job done, and I'm not going to take that risk. So then I put them in the lap of someone who I think could field it out properly. Now, how do I feel a loss? I can only feel a loss if I think if I'm thinking, my goodness, there's a huge demand for this. Man, I picked right that I went into this. If there's that guy, there's 50 other people. Let me hurry up and get ready. So when the next one comes here, like it motivates me to be ready for the next one.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think of that in terms of relationships, right? A lot of people are like, oh, that's the one that got away. You know, they waited, or they said no initially, or they never asked the person out, and then they get married and they're watching their life pass them by. They have three kids and everything else. And you're like, well, I'm still here and single, right? I hear that story a lot as pastor. And then you get to a certain point, you're like, will anyone love me? You know, and then you start to settle for things that you wouldn't have settled 5 years ago, 8 years ago, et cetera. You know, does every opportunity have a time stamp on it?
I believe in what should be. And I think that if it's supposed to be, it'll still be there when I come back around. You've heard the Pitney Bowes story before. Let me tell the Pitney Bowes story.
Yeah.
So this was like the first or second year that I started Youngstown Computer. Dirt poor, pouring everything into company, no money whatsoever, long hours, very, very, very hard, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then I got an offer from Pitney Bowes to work in their field support, making six figures, right? And I had to choose being poor, having no money, or go work for Pitney Bowes and make over $100,000, right? And I was like, oh, you know,
don't tell Deb. Don't tell Deb.
And I think Deb knew what I should do and what I was going to do were completely two different things. And what would happen had I taken that? So I get to look at it like, yeah, I would have probably made more money a little bit faster. And I have no idea where I would have been had I chose that track. And I knew it was one of those things where like, this is either going to be really, really good decision or really, really bad decision. Yeah. But I was comfortable with it. I had enough confidence to know that wherever I'm supposed to be, I'm going to end up. And if that's not where I'm supposed to be, then, you know, I got this great relationship with God and he's not subtle with me, and where I'm supposed to be, he'll punch me in the face if I'm not supposed to be there. Right. And I learn better that way.
I often tell people that we rely more on our ability to hear than his ability to speak. And if he needs to, he'll set a bush on fire in the middle of the desert to get our attention.
Yes.
And so, you know, ultimately, I people were like, well, I don't want to miss God. And I'm like, I promise you, you will not.
No.
Like, he will show up and he will let you know this is a yes or this is a no.
And he's, if he's whispering, just ask him not to whisper and he'll lay it down big time.
Yeah. There's nowhere in everyone that I see in scripture clearly knows what God wants and turns and runs in the other direction. They have the problems.
Yes.
There's never been somebody who's like, well, I didn't really know what you were asking. could you send that in an email, clarify that? Could you text me? There's never those instances. It's all very clear and people either choose it or don't choose it. I was going to ask if there was a spirituality element for you. I tend to run. That tends to be my first filter for things. And then I go to the other filters. Do you have a spirituality filter? Do you ever stop and, you know, pray about an opportunity? Do you ever, what does that look like for you? Or
it feels like a constant state. I don't okay. break away from it and yep. go into some kind of whatever. Yeah. It's just, I trust the intuition that's being passed into my brain
yep.
and wherever that's coming from. It's something that I can trust. And so that's yeah. become, you know, my process.
Yeah. There's a scripture for that, Joe. 1 Thessalonians, tells us that, we pray without ceasing, that concept that we're just in that constant state of communication with God. And when we make it like, oh, hold on, you know, that's not the idea behind prayer at all. It's supposed to be one continuous conversation that you have throughout the day. And I don't know how you talk to God, but I just talk to God like I'm talking to you. You know, I'll be in my car and be like, all right, Lord, I'm going to need some help in this next one. I'm not sure how to navigate that. You're going to have to send the right person. Please, you know, let the right phone call come in today or whatever. You know, just as I'm going throughout my day. And I find that just like you're saying, those things come in, and 95% of the time, I am certain the opportunity comes, and I almost don't even have to pause and be like, what do you think I should do? Like, you just know. And some people call that their gut or whatever, but I don't know. I think it's a spiritual intuition.
And when you say yes to that a lot and you trust in that, yeah, it gets more defined. Yeah.
100%. And you know, he knows your number. He knows how to get a hold of you. He knows where you live. And it's wild to me, the things that, quote unquote, fall into your lap. And you look at that and you just go like, wow, you really knew how to do that. You really knew exactly what to say, when to say it, who to show up when, you know, the only one that could orchestrate all of that. And it's kind of a powerful thing when you give it that kind of prominent space and time in your life.
And I get about once a month, I get like a wag, like a big one that shows me like, yeah, you know, that kind of a thing. Like you yeah. doubted or thought it was more you. And it's like, oh, no, it wasn't. You know? But it's often enough yeah. that it keeps me in check a little bit yeah. from it becoming more about like my wants rather than what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, that's always the tough one. Ambition messes with opportunities. Because when you get the opportunity to take the elevator versus the stairs, like you were talking about with Pitney Bowes there, it's like, man, I could jump on this elevator and not have to climb these 15 flights of steps.
Right.
And those 15 flights of steps are going to take me a lot longer. I'm going to be sore at the top. I'm going to, you know, I might fall. I might not, you know, I might pause in the middle somewhere. But if I get on this elevator, you know, we're going to go up and everybody's going to, you know, and then yeah, obviously, I know you're not big on this, but I am. I very much wrestle on the words of affirmation side. Like, I love to be affirmed in what I'm doing. And so, when something is going to, I have to wrestle first with my ambition. Am I doing this because, man, I want this. And then I have to wrestle with, am I just doing this for the recognition? Because I know those are two big pitfalls of my own ego, my own pride. And so for me, that's probably why I start with that spiritual filter, is because it helps me filter those two things out. Like, am I doing this for ego? Am I doing this, you know, for the wrong reasons? And then once I can kind of come to a space in myself where I'm like, you know what, my ego's in check, whether anybody ever sees this, I think it's okay. And you know what, yeah, it's a great opportunity, or you know, it's a key relationship, whatever, but you know what, I don't have to have it. I'll live my life just fine without it. Then I can go to the and have a more pure outlook on the opportunity, if that makes sense.
And that's important for our listeners too, that I'm going from sort of like give to get, but we're ending up at the exact same spot, no matter what side of the machine we put it through.
Yeah. Well, and some of it's just knowing yourself. You know Joe's pitfalls and you know Joe's strengths. And so when you get those opportunities that come your way, you're going to funnel it through the machine that's going to minimize your weaknesses and elevate your strengths. And I'm going to do the same thing.
Isn't it cool, though, that we know also how to short circuit that and we don't do it anyhow?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Sometimes I want to. Yeah. Have you ever had that conversation like, God, I would do a lot of really good things with that. If you let me win the lottery, like, can I just give you, I would give half of it away, Lord, you know?
Well, see, I'm the opposite. I say, I don't want to win the lottery because I will never know if it was me or it was the lottery winnings, and I need to know.
Well, I mean, I think, though, in terms of like that lottery opportunity, right, that the thing that you look at and you go, man, if that ever walked into my life, that would change everything. And when that, you know, opportunity, comes and, you're in that spot where you're like, all right, Lord, if you just let me, that'd be great. And the whole time, like, you're not supposed to do this. And you're like, yeah, but it'd be really cool. And I promise I'll be really good with it.
He's just laughing at us.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's the principle. And I've had to coach a number of people through this and I often have to coach myself through it. I can either ask him to bless what I'm doing or I can do what he's already blessing. And there's certain things that he's already doing that if I just align myself with and my skill with and those opportunities come together, it's powerful. But if I'm like, hey, I want to do this over here, would you come help me with that? He's like, well, I'm already over here doing this. Why don't you come participate? I've sent you these opportunities, but you're trying to force a square peg into a round hole over here. I mean, good luck with that, but I'm not going to bless it. I'm over here, doing this. So,
right. Not that he needs to like have an easier path, but I sometimes think, would it be easier, with someone like me that if I will do what you ask and you just got to filter out the stuff that I'm not supposed to be versus saying, overcoming my objections and getting me what I'm supposed to do, which path is easier.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's amazing to me because, you have other people that will, so you will probably lean on the side where you will say yes to things you shouldn't rather than saying no to things you should.
Yes.
Right. That's probably more the case for you. Most people, though, say no to everything and only yes to one or two things. Most people overthink their opportunities. They have that analysis paralysis and it just stops them from making a decision. Most people wrestle with, well, the opportunity came, well, why did it come? And I don't really want to do the extra work. And they filter through all the reasons it won't work and the negative area. And they end up, getting to 45 and they have to go out and buy a Corvette and have a midlife crisis because they've botched and knocked out and closed every door that's come their way because, well, it'd be too much work and I don't really have time and the loan and the kids and the whatever, instead of, well, I said yes to a whole bunch of stuff and a few of those things were horrible.
Right.
But man, I'm so glad I said yes to these five things because they've shaped my whole life for the next 20 years.
Yeah. And so this is one of the rare cases where I think that, modeling isn't always good to see what other people and how they choose. Because if you had someone follow me around, they would basically say all the things that I'm doing are not possible, even when they're experiencing it, because you put it through that filter. It's like, it's too much. I couldn't, sort of wrap my brain around it.
Well, I think I saw someone commented on your Facebook post today and said, another job, you have so many jobs, how many can you have? And you just put the infinity symbol. And I was like, that's such a Joe thing to put. Yeah. But it's true. Like when you're doing your passion and you're aligned correctly and you're in that right rhythm, with God, with life, with yourself, man, there are just things that just fall into place and you can do 15 things. And people are like, how are you spinning so many plates? And it's like, well, I'm not, I'm actually just in perfect rhythm with where I'm supposed to be. Now, when I get out of rhythm,
you feel it.
And those things come crashing down and then you got to recenter yourself, in that sense. And so, how do you, recenter yourself? How do you bring yourself back to, all right, this is starting to spin. I've got too many plates in the air. I got to set a couple down here, or I got to figure out I'm just off rhythm. When your heart gets out of rhythm, they shock it back into place.
Right.
So how do you get yourself back into rhythm?
So we could do a whole show on this topic, but I'll give you I'll try to articulate it in the smallest package possible. So I'm a big autopilot person. taking things that you use your imagination, your conscious brain for, means that you have to like think through a lot of things. I like to decide something and then just keep that decision for always and forever. So I don't like wash my socks differently every time and invent new ways, because it's not important enough. I reserve my imagination, my energy for things that matter. Everything else, I don't. Like, as much as I can put, if I can drive the same way to work just so I don't have to think about driving to work, I could free my mind up to do something other than drive to work and, you know, come up with a new pathway for some reason to shave 39 seconds off of the trip. And that's really how it is.
Yeah.
So the more things I can put on autopilot and make similar and create that frequency where I'm doing the same thing, the more stuff I can take. But if you get me out of a rhythm where now I'm thinking through things that are stupid, right? The one thing I have to do is go minimalist. I have to rip things out that don't matter usually, because usually I'll bookend the stuff that matters with a bunch of shit that doesn't. And so I'll remove those bookends and free up some time and then level everything back off again.
When I first met you, I remember you said you were in a season where you had pulled away from a lot of things. And you kept saying to me, he's like, Joe kept saying, I'm getting ready to ramp up. I'm getting ready to ramp up, get ready. And I watched you go through, not the ripping out season. You'd already done that, but, you know, our relationship now is a couple years old and I've watched you ramp up into a whole bunch of stuff. But that came out of that minimalist, season where you had ripped away a whole bunch of stuff. How do you know when to kill an opportunity? So we just ended our Saturday night services. It was my baby. We did really, really well, but it never really came back after COVID. Our Sundays are growing. We're probably going to have to go to two Sunday services. No, we are going to have to go to two Sunday services come the fall. And I know that in order to do that, we had to consolidate some resources. We had to pull back a little bit, and eventually we want to do church in another location. So I had to have a funeral for Saturday night. Sorry, I had to put it to rest for myself. Our staff was like, thank you, Jesus. A lot of the volunteers and stuff were like, oh, this is going to be awesome. It was a win church-wise, but for me, I had to be willing to detach myself from it emotionally, make the right decision as a leader, and then allow it to fade off into the sunset.
All right. So when you first met me, I was detaching from things that were throwing me out of sequence, right?
Yeah.
And I loved all of those things. None of them were fireable, right? Much like what you're talking about with Saturday.
It's
now there's pieces of it that you keep because they have value.
Yeah.
The pieces of it that were causing you out of cycle, that's the part that you need to kill. So I'll give you one, for instance. I was sitting a board seat for the American Red Cross. I love the organization. I support them. I throw money at them. I'll help them whenever they ask. But I was on the board of the American Red Cross because I wanted to tie in and help them market themselves. I had attachments to the media. I mean, it was really fun. It was in my wheelhouse. Yeah. I really enjoyed doing it. I liked the group. But I don't think I was being very productive in that. I was not in a space where I had the time to be able to do it right. Same thing with Rotary. I was in Rotary. And
I did Rotary before too.
And they had, you know, great projects they were working on. And they assigned me stuff that was part of my wheelhouse and I should have been really good at it. And I was dropping the ball and dropping the ball and dropping the ball and dropping the ball. And I'm like, all right, well, I love this place. They love me. I love what they're giving me, but I'm just not doing a good job. This is a competency problem more than anything else. So what I said was, I'm going to take a break and remanage myself. And if I can't come back to the table and be productive, I'm going to bow out until I can. So will I be part of Rotary? Sure. Will I be part of a board? Yeah. When the time is in that season again, but I got to be honest about it and pick out the part, the real reason. It wasn't, there's anything wrong with the Red Cross or that board seat. It was me. I mean, I probably took it out of turn and I just got to right up that wrong.
Interesting. Yeah. And I think that's important for people to understand. Sometimes it's not necessarily the wrong opportunity. It's not that there's anything wrong with them or you. It's just not the right time.
Exactly.
Have you ever had an opportunity that you passed on and then circled back to and got later?
Oh, heck yeah. All the time. And that's why that shelf exists, where if I liked it enough, I put it on the shelf because I don't want to forget about it. And it is a literal shelf with, not a literal shelf, but a on a piece of paper shelf where I actually put it on a place to remember. So when I go back through all the stuff that I really want to be working, I'm like, oh, yeah. And then I recycle it. Now, here's the thing. It's like a breakup for most people.
Yeah.
If you bring out a hurt thing that has some pain to it, you take it off and you get to feel bad. I don't. Like, when I pull that off, yeah, I'm like, ooh, let's go. Yeah. Like, it's not until a regular person comes along and say, wasn't that a failure last time? I'm like, no, I didn't even think about it, you know?
Come here, let me show you a failure. Well, hey, we only have a few more minutes left in the show, so that means you only have a few more minutes to call in. 330-595-1600. Win $600 and AirPod Pros.
I'm thinking that no, people don't like money. That's really the only conclusion that I can come.
I mean, how high are you willing to go?
It's forever.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm going to start calling in. you're going to have Fug Reed calling in, you know, to the show. That's funny.
And the clues will probably be able to, you know, give you a little bit better.
Speaking of an opportunity you need to say yes to, call in right now.
Yes. There you go. See if you've learned your lesson after today's programming.
Oh, it's so good. Well, what are some opportunities that you are hoping come your way? What's a key relationship you're waiting to slide in your way?
It's a big one.
What's a financial investment you're waiting for? What's a business thing you're waiting for? What are some opportunities you're waiting to come your way?
We talked a couple weeks ago, and the two things that are going to plague the United States is batteries, like the storage of energy and the creation of energy.
Yep.
And really, people are working on this, but they're not probably going to solve this. I'm going to solve this. Like, I am going to just bury myself in to the engineering side and figure out a way to solve this big problem. And I am going to make you, the United States, do this in spite of any losses and in spite of any competition and in spite of any getting in my way.
What I saw your Facebook Live. So you're experimenting right now with a solar powered energy backup system, essentially, for a house.
Yeah.
So you take the solar panels, put a couple of them on somebody's roof. They're not enough to power the whole house.
Right.
But we can store some power in some lithium ion batteries. I saw you had a pretty substantial battery there, but you're going to need a couple of them, or you're going to need a very large one. And then the goal is to take that, and if you have a power outage, to, hey, I can run my fridge on that. Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah. And so... In my motorhome, it has six batteries, and that six batteries are able to pretty much run the refrigerator and stuff for a couple days without being plugged into anything. So I'm thinking, what's unique about the motorhome that I can't do this in my house in some capacity? Like, if I needed to bug out of town, I could just get in the motorhome and at least get a couple hours or a couple days worth of stuff. So, you know, the answer when people ask about solar is that it's not... There's not a system that in Ohio that is big enough to be completely off grid. It's just not. So when you sell big setups, like, you're going to regret it unless you just have a bunch of money to burn. Not regular people are going to buy into that. But if you have something very specific, I used my solar panels when the power went out for a couple of days to keep my sump pump because we had storms. And so if the sump pump's not running, you have floods, and I didn't want to have flood. So I ran a stupid battery to run the sump pump. And I was like, yeah, this is something worthwhile because it's your own insurance policy against it. It doesn't make any financial sense, but in an emergency, you're not really thinking financial sense. Sure. You're, you know, bouncing back from a problem is the goal.
So you're waiting for an opportunity in terms of the right investor, the right company, the right relationship, the right introduction, the right engineer, all of it?
Mostly the information side of things. There's some engineering problems that have plagued the industry for a while. And I think the more I play on it, I'm going to get a light bulb moment that's going to be the answer to this question.
Yeah. I bet there's a YSU student that would love to, like, tinker and work on this with you, an engineer student or some kid that's messing with something dumb in his dorm room. And it's
they have the answer, but don't know what to do with it. And I know what to do with it. I just don't have the answer.
Yeah. So if you're sitting in your dorm room, you know, drinking something you shouldn't be drinking or smoking something you shouldn't be smoking and playing video games, Joe has a job for you.
This show will make its way onto your computer somehow, and you'll listen to there's a dude out here that needs the math in your head to help me solve this problem.
Yeah. So you're waiting on that opportunity. What other opportunities are you hoping come your way?
I fell in love with these addicts and giving them a pathway back into some normalcy. I watched these guys just plead against circumstances and their own brains to just have another shot. And, you know, I think that you and I have this, you know, opportunity to, like, deliver something that's not deserved and doesn't have any strings attached, just another chance to somebody. And I think we can pull it off because we're not looking what's in it for us. We're not looking in and making sure that you're successful at it. We just want to give chances to people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been, I had to do a funeral for a young man who passed, who had been coming to the church for a little bit, and did that last night. And it's, funerals are never easy, but man, when you see, you know, guy after guy lining up, you know, at the casket, that is all in recovery and trying to, you know, right themselves and get back into their kids' lives. And, you know, and you and I on Wednesdays hear those story after story after story. It's just gut wrenching. 'Cause you're like, man, if I could fix this for you, I would. And you know, to some extent, you know, there's a huge industry and a huge group of people that are trying to make that happen between rehabs and everything else. And there's good along with the bad, in there as well. But you know, there's so much that, we've only been really working with this community for about 8 months, and there's so much that we've learned, and the opportunities are there, to really see some of these guys turn it all around.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's going to be like a success story that all that's going to need to be planted, that, because if you can do one of them, then you can just scale it up and do thousands of them. And I it really is in need. You see society sort of approaching this in a, you know, sort of like a punitive way.
Yep.
And because, you know, the more you diminish the people and the persons, right, then it's just a problem.
You just have the scarlet letter for the rest of your life to wear around. Yeah.
And I want to do the opposite, where once you're back, I want you to be able to move on from where you were, like in your verbiage and what, how other people feel about you. Once you hit that reset button, I want it to be permanent.
Yeah, totally. Something our world needs more of: forgiveness.
That's it.
And being
mercy
able to,
and forgiveness.
Yeah, being able to help people take that first next step. And that's important. Well, we are coming up on closing time. We hope you enjoyed the opportunity of listening to the show today. And if you have an opportunity, you want to get involved with something, you can message us at Youngstown Studio. We're always looking to partner up and do some great stuff here in the Valley. So appreciate you listening, and we'll see you on Thursday.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.